This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Truth Witch by Susan Dennard. Read for you by Cassandra Campbell. 1. Everything had gone horribly wrong. None of Safiya von Hostel's hastily laid plans for this holdup were unfolding as they ought. First, the black carriage with the gleaming gold standard was not the target Safi and Isolt had been waiting for. Worse, this cursed carriage was accompanied by 8 rows of city guards, blinking midday sun from their eyes. Second, there was absolutely nowhere for Safi and Isolt to go. Up on their limestone outcropping, the dusty road below was the only path to Vinyatsa City. And just as this thrust of gray rock overlooked the road overlooked nothing but turquoise sea forever. It was 70 feet of cliff pounded by rough waves and even rougher winds. And third, the real kick in the kidneys, was that as soon as the guards marched over the girls' buried trap and the fire pots within exploded, well, then those guards would be scouring every inch of the cliffside. Hell's gates is, Safi snapped down her spyglass. There are 4 guards in each row. 8 times 4 makes... Her face scrunched up. 15, 16, 17. It's 32, Isolt said blandly. 32 thrice-stemmed guards with 32 thrice-stemmed crossbows. Isolt only nodded and eased back the hood of her brown cape. The sun lit up her face. She was the perfect contrast to Safi. Midnight hair to Safi's wheat, moon skin to Safi's tan, and hazel eyes to Safi's blue. Hazel eyes that were now sliding to Safi as Isolt plucked away the spyglass.
I hate to say I told you so.
Then don't.
But,
Isolt finished.
Everything he said to you last night was a lie. He was most certainly not interested in a simple card game.
Isolt ticked off 2 gloved fingers.
He was not leaving town this morning by the northern highway, and I bet.
A 3rd finger unfurled.
His name wasn't even Caden.
Caden. If, no. When Safi found that chiseled cheater, she was going to break every bone in his perfect rutting face. Safi groaned and banged her head against the rock. She'd lost all of her money to him. Not just some, but all. Last night had hardly been the first time Safi had bet all of her and Isolt's savings on a card game. It wasn't as if she ever lost, for as the saying went, you can't trick a truth witch. Plus, the winnings off 1 round alone from the highest stake tarot game in Vinyatsa City would have bought Safi and Isolt a place of their own. No more living in an attic for Isolt. No more stuffy guildmaster's guest room for Safi. But as Lady Fate would have it, Isolt hadn't been able to join Safi at the game. Her heritage had banned her from the highbrow inn where the game had taken place. And without her thread sister beside her, Safi was prone to mistakes. Particularly mistakes of the strong-jawed, snide-tongued variety, who plied Safi with compliments that somehow slipped right past her truth witchery. In fact, she hadn't sensed a lying bone in chiseled cheater's body when she'd collected her winnings from the in-house bank. Or when chiseled cheater had hooked his arm in hers and guided her into the warm night. Or when he'd leaned in for a chaste yet wildly heady kiss on the cheek.
I will never gamble again, she swore,
her heel drumming on the limestone.
And I will never flirt again. If we're going to run for it,
Isolt said, interrupting Safi's thoughts,
then we need to do so before the guards reach our trap.
You don't say. Safi glared at her thread sister, who watched the incoming guards through the spyglass. Wind kicked at Isolt's dark hair, lifting the wispy bits that had fallen from her braid. A distant gull cried its obnoxious scree, skrrt scree, skrrt scree.
Safi hated gulls. They always shit on her head.
More guards,
Isolt murmured, the waves almost drowning out her words. But then, louder, she said,
20 more guards coming from the north.
For half a moment, Safi's breath choked off. Now, even if she and Isolt could somehow face the 32 guards accompanying the carriage, the other 20 guards would be upon them before they could escape. Safi's lungs burst back to life with a vengeance. Every curse she'd ever learned rolled off her tongue.
We're down to 2 options,
Isolt cut in, scooting back to Safi's side.
We either turn ourselves in
over my grandmother's rotting corpse,
Safi spat.
Or we try to reach the guards before they trigger the trap. Then all we have to do is brazen our way through.
Safi glanced at Isolt.
As always, her thread sister's face was impassive. Blank. The only part of her that showed stress was her long nose. It twitched every few seconds. Once we're through, Isolt added, drawing her hood back into place and casting her face in darkness. We'll follow the usual plan. Now, hurry.
Safi didn't need to be told to hurry. Obviously, she would hurry. But she bit back her retort. Isolt was yet again saving their hides. Besides, if Safi had to hear one more I told you so, she'd throttle her thread sister and leave her carcass to the hermit crabs. Isolt's feet hit the gritty road, and as Safi descended nimbly beside her, dust plumed around her boots, and inspiration struck.
Wait! Is!
In a flurry of movement, Safi swung off her cape. Then with a quick slash-whip-slash of her parrying knife, she cut off the hood.
Skirt and kerchief will be less threatening as peasants.
Isolt's eyes narrowed. Then she dropped to the road.
But then our faces will be more obvious. Rub on as much dirt as you can.
As Isolt scrubbed her face, turning it a muddy brown, Safi wound the hood over her hair and wrapped the cape around her waist. Once she'd tucked the brown cloak into her belt, careful to hide her scabbards beneath, she too slathered dirt and mud over her cheeks. In less than a minute, both girls were ready. Safi ran a quick, scrutinizing eye over Isolt. But the disguise was good. Good enough. Her thread sister looked like a peasant in desperate need of a bath. With Isolt just behind, Safi launched into a quick clip around the limestone corner. Her breath held tight. Then she exhaled sharply, her pace never slowing. The guards were still 30 paces from the buried fire pots. Safi flashed a bumbling wave at a mustached guard in the front. He lifted his hand, and the other guards came to an abrupt stop. Then, one by one, each guard's crossbow leveled on the girls. Safi pretended not to notice, and when she reached the pile of gray pebbles that marked the trap, she cleared it with the slightest hop. Behind her, Isolt made the same almost imperceptible leap. Then the mustached man, clearly the leader, raised his own crossbow.
Halt!
Safi complied, letting her feet drag to a stop, while also covering as much ground as she could.
Onga,
she asked, the Arithuanian word for yes. After all, if they were going to be peasants, they might as well be immigrant peasants.
Do you speak Dalmati?
The leader asked, looking first at Safi, then at Isolt. Isolt came to a clumsy stop beside Safiya.
We speak a little.
It was easily the worst attempt at an Arithuanian accent that Safiya had ever heard from Isolt's mouth.
We are in trouble.
Safi lifted her hands in a universally submissive gesture. We only go to Vinyatsa City. Izzut gave a dramatic cough, and Safi wanted to throttle her. No wonder Iz was always the cut purse and Safi the distraction. Her thread sister was awful at acting.
We want a city healer,
Safi rushed to say before Izzut could muster another unbelievable cough.
In case she has the plague. Our mother died from it, you see, and, oh, how she coughed in those final days. There was so much blood.
Plague, the guard interrupted.
Oh, yes, Safi nodded knowingly. My sister is very ill.
Izzut heaved another cough, but this one was so convincing, Safi actually flinched, and then hobbled to her.
Oh, you need a healer. Come, come, let your sister help you.
The guard turned back to his men, already dismissing the girls, already bellowing orders.
Back in formation. Resume march.
Gravel crunched, footsteps drummed. The girls trudged onward, passing guards with wrinkled noses. No one wanted Izzut's plague, it would seem. Safi was just towing Izzut past the black carriage when its door popped wide. A saggy old man leaned his scarlet-clad torso outside. His wrinkles shook in the wind. It was the leader of the Gold Guild, a man named Yotaluzzi, whom Safi had seen from afar, at last night's establishment no less. The old guildmaster clearly didn't recognize Safi, though. And after a cursory glance, he lifted his reedy voice.
Edwin, get this foreign filth away from me.
A figure in white stalked around the carriage's back wheel. His cape billowed, and though a hood shaded his face, there was no hiding the knife baldric across his chest or the sword at his waist. He was a Kerouan monk, a mercenary trained to kill since childhood. Safi froze, and without thinking, she eased her arm away from Izzut, who twisted silently behind her. The guards would reach the girl's trap at any moment, and this was their ready position. Initiate complete.
Erythuanians, the monk said.
His voice was rough, but not with age, with underuse.
From what village?
He strolled a single step towards Safi. She had to fight the urge not to cower back. Her truth witchery was suddenly bursting with discomfort, a grating sensation, as if skin were being scratched off the back of her neck. And it wasn't his words that set Safi's magic to flaring. It was his presence. This monk was young, yet there was something off about him. Something too ruthless. Too dangerous to ever be trusted. He pulled back his hood, revealing a pale face and close-cropped brown hair. Then, as the monk sniffed the air near Safi's head, red swirled around his pupils. Safi's stomach turned to stone. Blood witch. This monk was a rutting blood witch. A creature from the myths. A being who could smell a person's blood, smell their very witchery, and track it across entire continents. If he latched onto Safi's or Izzut's scent, then they were in deep, deep...
Pop, pop, pop!
Gunpowder burst inside fire pots. The guards had hit the trap. Safi acted instantly, as did the monk. His sword swished from its scabbard. Her knife came up. She clipped the edge of his blade, parrying it aside. He recovered and lunged. Safi lurched back. Her calves hit Izzut, yet in a single fluid movement, Izzut kneeled, and Safi rolled sideways over her back. Initiate complete. It was how the girls fought. How they lived. Safi unfurled from her flip and withdrew her sword, just as Izzut's moon sides clinked free. Far behind them, more explosions thundered out. Shouts rose up. The horses kicked and whinnied.
Isolt spun for the monk's chest. He jumped backward and skipped onto the carriage wheel. Yet where Safi had expected a moment of distraction, she only got the monk diving at her from above. He was good. The best fighter she'd ever faced. But Safi and Isolt were better.
Safi swooped out of reach just as Isolt wheeled into the monk's path. In a blur of spinning steel, her scythe sliced into his arms, his chest, his gut. And then, like a tornado, she was past. And Safi was waiting, watching for what couldn't be real and yet clearly was. Every cut on the monk's body was healing before her eyes. There was no doubt now. This monk was a thrice-damned blood witch straight from Safi's darkest nightmares. So she did the only thing she could conjure. She threw her parrying knife directly at the monk's chest. It thunked through his rib cage and embedded deep in his heart. He stumbled forward, hitting his knees, and his red eyes locked on Safi's. His lips curled back. With a snarl, he wrenched the knife from his chest. The wound spurted and began to heal over. But Safi didn't have time for another strike. The guards were doubling back. The guildmaster was screaming from within his carriage, and the horses were charging into a frantic gallop. Isolt darted in front of Safi, scythes flying fast and beating two arrows from the air. Then, for a brief moment, the carriage blocked the girls from the guards. Only the Blood Witch could see them. And though he reached for his knives, he was too slow, too drained from the magic of healing. Yet he was smiling. Smiling, as if he knew something that Safi didn't. As if he could and would hunt her down to make her pay for this.
Come on!
Isolt yanked at Safi's arm, pulling her into a sprint toward the cliffside. At least this was part of their plan. At least this they had practiced so often they could do it with their eyes closed. Just as the first crossbow bolts pounded the road behind them, the girls reached a waist-high boulder on the ocean side of the road. They plunked their blades back into scabbards. Then, in two leaps, Safi was over the rock, and Isolt too. On the other side, the cliff ran straight down to thundering white waves. Two ropes waited, affixed to a stake pounded deep into the earth. With far more speed and force than was ever intended for this escape, Safi snatched up her rope, hooked her foot in a loop at the end, gripped a knot at head level, and jumped.
Two. Air whizzed past Safi's ears and upper nose as she sprang out, down toward white waves, away from the 70-foot cliff,
until Safi reached the rope's end. With a sharp yank that shattered through her body and tore into her gripping hands, she flew at the barnacle-covered cliffside. This was about to hurt. She hit with a crash, teeth ramming her tongue. Pain sizzled through her body. Limestone cut her arms, her face, her legs. She snapped out her hands to grip the cliff, just as Isolt slammed into the rocks beside her.
Ignite, Safi grunted.
The word that triggered the rope's magic was lost in the roar of ocean waves, but the command hit its mark. In a flash of white flame that shot up faster than eyes could travel, their ropes ignited and disintegrated. A fine ash kicked away on the wind. A few specks settled on the girls' kerchiefs, their shoulders.
Arrows!
Isolt roared, flattening herself against the rock as bolts zipped past. Some skittered off the rocks, some sank into waves. One sliced through Safi's skirt. Then she'd managed to dig her toes in cracks, grab for handholds, and scramble sideways. Her muscles trembled and strained until, at last, she and Isolt had ducked beneath a slight overhang. Until, at last, They could pause and let the arrows fall harmlessly around them. The rocks were wet, the barnacles vicious, and water swept at the girl's ankles. Salty drops battered over and over, until eventually the arrows stopped falling.
Are they coming?
Safi rasped at Isolt. Isolt shook her head.
They're still there. I can feel their threads waiting.
Safi blinked, trying to get the salt from her eyes.
We're going to have to swim, aren't we?
She rubbed her face on her shoulder. It didn't help.
Think you can make it to the lighthouse?
Both girls were strong swimmers, but strong didn't matter in waves that could pummel a dolphin.
We don't have a choice,
Isolt said. She glanced at Safi with a fierceness that always made Safi feel stronger.
We can toss our skirts left, and while the guards shoot those, we dive right.
Safi nodded, and with a grimace, she angled her body so she could remove her skirt. Once both girls had their brown skirts free, Isolt's arm reared back.
Ready?
She asked.
Ready,
Safi heaved. The skirt flew out from beneath the overhang, Isolt's right behind it. And then both girls stepped away from the rock face and sank beneath the waves. As Isolt Detmidenzi wriggled free from her sea-soaked tunic, boots, pants, and finally underclothes, everything hurt. Every peeled-off layer revealed 10 new slices from the limestone and barnacles, and each burst of spindrift made her aware of 10 more. This ancient crumbling lighthouse was effective for hiding, but it was inescapable until the tide went out. For now, the water outside was well above Isolt's chest, and hopefully that depth, as well as the crashing waves between here and the marshy shoreline, would deter the Blood Witch from following. The interior of the lighthouse was no larger than Isolt's attic bedroom over Matthew's coffee shop. Sunlight beamed in through algae-slimed windows and wind-tugged seafoam through the arched door.
I'm sorry, Safi said,
her voice muffled as she squirmed from her sodden tunic. Then her shirt was completely off, and she tossed it on a windowsill. Safi's usually tanned skin was pale beneath her freckles.
Don't apologize,
Isolt gathered her own discarded clothes.
I'm the one who told you about the card game in the first place.
This is true, Safi replied, her voice shaking as she hopped on one foot and tried to remove her pants, with her boots still on. She always did that, and it boggled Isolt's mind that an 18-year-old could still be too impatient to undress herself properly.
But, Safi added, I'm the one who wanted the nicer rooms. If we'd just bought that place 2 weeks ago. Then we'd have rats for roommates,
Isolt interrupted. She shuffled to the nearest water-free, sunlit patch of floor.
You were right to want a different place. It costs more, but it would have been worth it. Would have been being the key words.
With a loud grunt, Safi finally wrestled free of her pants.
There'll be no place of our own now, Is. I bet every guard in Vinyatsa City is out looking for us. Not to mention the...
For a moment, Safi stared at her boots. Then, in a frantic movement, she tore off the right one.
So will the Blood Witch. Blood Witch. Blood Witch.
The words pulsed through Isolt in time to her heart, in time to her blood.
Isolt had never seen a Blood Witch before, or anyone with a magic linked to the void.
Void witches were just scary stories, after all. They weren't real. They didn't guard guildmasters and try to gut you with swords. After wringing out her pants and smoothing each fold on a windowsill, Isolt shuffled to a leather satchel at the back of the lighthouse. She and Safi always stowed an emergency kit here before a heist, just in case the worst scenario unfolded. Not that they'd held many heists before. Only every now and then for the lowlifes who deserved it. Like those two apprentices who'd ruined one of Guildmaster Alex's silk shipments and tried to blame it on Safi. Or those thugs who'd busted into Matthew's shop while he was away and stolen his silver cutlery. Then there were those four separate occasions when Safi's tarot card games had ended in brawls and missing coins. Justice had been required, of course. Not to mention the reclamation of pilfered goods. Today's encounter, though, was the first time the emergency satchel had actually been needed. After rummaging past the spare clothes and a water bag, Isolde found two rags and a tub of lanolin. Then she hauled up the girl's discarded weapons and trudged back to Safi.
Let's clean our blades and come up with a plan. We have to get back to the city somehow.
Safi yanked off her second boot before accepting her sword and parrying knife. Both girls settled cross-legged on the rough floor, and Isolde sank into the familiar barnyard scent of the grease, into the careful scrubbing motion of cleaning her scythes.
What did the Blood Witch's threads look like?
Safi asked quietly.
I didn't notice,
Isolde murmured.
Everything happened so fast.
She rubbed all the harder at the steel, protecting her beautiful Marstaki blades, gifts from Matthew's heart thread, Habim, against rust. A silence stretched through the stone ruins. The only sounds were the squeak of cloth on steel, the eternal crash of Jadansi waves. Isolde knew she seemed unperturbed as she cleaned, but she was absolutely certain that her threads twined with the same frightened shades as Safi's. Isolde was a thread witch, though, which meant she couldn't see her own threads, or those of any other thread witch. When her witchery had manifested at 9 years old, Isolde's heart had felt like it would pound itself to dust. She was crumbling beneath a weight of a million threads, none of which were her own. Everywhere she looked, she saw the threads that build, the threads that bind, and the threads that break. Yet she could never see her own threads, or how she wove into the world. So, just as every Nomatsi thread witch did, Isolde had learned to keep her body cool when it ought to be hot, to keep her fingers still when they ought to be trembling, to ignore the emotions that drove everyone else.
I think, Safi said, scattering Isolde's thoughts, the Blood Witch knows I'm a Truth Witch.
Isolde's scrubbing paused.
Why?
Her voice was flat as the steel in her hands.
Would you think that? Because of the way he smiled at me.
Safi shivered.
He smelled my magic, just like the tales say. And now he can haunt me. Which means he could be tracking us right now.
Frost ran down Isolde's back, jolted in her shoulders. She scoured at her blade all the harder. Normally, the act of cleaning helped her find stasis, helped her thoughts slow and her practicality rise to the surface. She was the natural tactician, while Safi was the one with the first sparks of an idea. Initiate, complete. Except no solutions came to Isolde right now. She and Safi could lie low and avoid city guards for a few weeks, but they couldn't hide from a Blood Witch. Especially if that Blood Witch knew what Safi was and could sell her to the highest bidder. When a person stood directly before Safi, she could tell truth from lie, reality from deception. And as far as Isolde had learned in her tutoring sessions with Matthew, the last recorded Truth Witch had died a century ago, beheaded by a Marstaki emperor for allying herself with a Kartoran queen. If Safi's magic ever became public knowledge, she would be used as a political tool, or eliminated as a political threat. Safi's power was that valuable and that rare, which was why, for Safi's entire life, she'd kept her magic secret. Like Isolde, she was a heretic, an unregistered witch, The back of Safiya's right hand was unadorned, and no witch mark tattoo proclaimed her powers. Yet one of these days, someone other than one of Safiya's closest friends would figure out what she was. And when that day came, soldiers would storm the Silk Guildmaster's guest room and drag away Safiya in chains. Soon, the girl's blades were cleaned and resheathed, and Safiya was pinning Isolt with one of her harder, more contemplative stares.
"Out with it," Isolt ordered. "We may have to flee the city, Is. Leave the Dalmati Empire entirely."
Isolt rolled her salty lips together, trying not to frown, trying not to feel. The thought of abandoning Vinyatsa City? Isolt couldn't do it. The capital of the Dalmati Empire was her home. The people in the Northern Wharf District had stopped noticing her pale Nomatsi skin or her angled Nomatsi eyes. And it had taken her 6.5 years to carve out that niche.
"For now," Isolt said quietly, "let's worry about getting into the city unseen. And let's pray, too, that the Blood Witch didn't actually smell your blood. Or your magic."
Safiya huffed a weary sigh and nestled into a beam of sunlight. It made her skin glow, her hair luminescent.
"To whom should I pray?"
Isolt scratched at her nose, grateful to have the subject shift.
"We were almost killed by a Carowin monk, so why not pray to the Origin Wells?"
Safiya gave a little shudder.
"If that person prays to the Origin Wells, then I don't want to. How about that Nubrevnin god? What's his name? Nordin? That's the one?"
Safiya clasped her hands to her chest and stared up at the ceiling.
"Nordin, god of the Nubrevnin waves. I think it's all waves, Safiya. And everything else, too."
Safiya rolled her eyes.
"God of all waves and everything else, too. Can you please make sure no one comes after us? Especially him. Just keep him far away. And if you could keep the Vinyatsa city guards away, too, that would be nice. This is easily the worst prayer I have ever heard,"
Isolt declared.
"Vizos piss on you, Is. I'm not done yet."
Safiya heaved a sigh through her nose and then resumed her prayer.
"Please return all of our money to me before he or Habim get back from their trip. And that is all. Thank you very much, O Sacred Norden."
Then she hastily added,
"Oh, and please ensure that Chiseled Cheater gets exactly what he deserves."
Isolt almost snorted at that last request. Except that a wave crashed into the lighthouse, sudden and rough against the stone. Water splattered Isolt's face. She swiped it away, agitated. Warm instead of cool.
"Please, Norden,"
she whispered, rubbing sea spray off her forehead.
"Please just get us through this alive."
3. Reaching Matthew's coffee shop where Isolt lived proved harder than Safiya had anticipated. She and Isolt were exhausted, hungry, and bruised to hell flames, so even the basic act of walking made Safiya want to groan, or sit down, or at least ease her aches with a hot bath and pastries. But baths and pastries weren't happening anytime soon. Guards swarmed everywhere in Vinyatsa City. And by the time the girls had straggled into the Northern Wharf District, it was almost dawn. They'd spent half the night hiking blearily from their lighthouse to the capital, and then the other half of the night slinking through alleys and clambering over kitchen gardens. Every flash of white, every dangling piece of laundry, every torn sailcloth or tattered curtain had punched Safi's stomach into her mouth. But it had never been the Blood Witch, thank the gods. And right as night began fading into dawn, the sign to Matthew's coffee shop appeared. It poked out of a narrow road branching off the main wharfside avenue. Real Marstaki coffee. Best in Vinyatsa City. It was not, in fact, real Marstaki coffee. Matthew wasn't even from the Empire of Marstock. Instead, the coffee was filtered and bland, catering to, as Habim always called it, dull Western palates. Matthew's coffee was also not the best in the city. Even Matthew would admit that the dingy hole in the wall in the southern wharf district had much better coffee. But up here, on the northern edges of the capital, people didn't wander in for coffee. They came in for business. The sort of business word witches like Matthew excelled at. The trade of rumors and secrets. The planning of heists and cons. He ran coffee shops all across the witchlands. And any news about anything always reached Matthew first. It was his word witchery that had made Matthew the best choice for Safi's tutor, since it allowed him to speak all tongues. More important, though, Matthew's heart thread, Habim, had worked for Safi's uncle her entire life, both as a man at arms and as a constantly displeased instructor. So, when Safi had been sent south, it had only made sense for Matthew to take over where Habim had left off. Not that Habim had completely abandoned Safi's training. He visited his heart thread often in Vinyatsa City, and then proceeded to make Safi's life miserable with extra hours of speed drills or ancient battle strategies. Safi reached the coffee shop first, and after hopping a puddle of sewage that was frighteningly orange, she began tapping out the lock spell on the front door, a recent installment since the stolen cutlery incident. Habim could complain to Matthew all he wanted about the cost of an ether-witched luck spell, but as far as Safi could see, it was worth the money. Vinyatsa City had a hefty crime rate, first because it was a port, and second because wealthy guildmasters were just so appealing to piastra-hungry lowlifes. Of course, it was those same elected guildmasters who also paid for an extensive, seemingly endless collection of city guards, one of whom was pausing right at the alleyway's mouth. He faced away, scanning the moored ships of the northern wharf district.
"Faster," Isolde muttered. She prodded Safi's back. "The guard is turning, turning."
The door flew wide, Isolde shoved, and Safi toppled into the dark shop.
"What a rat,"
she hissed, rounding on Isolde.
"The guards know us around here."
"Exactly," Isolde retorted, shutting the door and bolting the locks.
"But from afar, we look like two peasants busting into a locked-up coffee shop."
Safi mumbled an unwilling, "Good point," as Isolde stepped forward and whispered,
"A light."
At once, 26 bewitched wicks guttered to life, revealing bright, curly Marstaki designs on the walls, the ceiling, the floor. It was overdone. Too many rugs of clashing patterns leapt at Safi. But, like the coffee, Westerners had a certain idea about how a Marstaki shop ought to look. With the sigh of someone finally able to breathe, Isolde strode toward the spiral staircase in the back corner. Safi followed. Up they went, first to the second story, where Matthew and Habim lived, next to the slope-ceilinged attic that Isolde called home, its narrow space crowded with two cots and a wardrobe. For 6.5 years now, Isolde had lived and studied and worked here. After she'd fled her tribe, Matthew had been the only employer willing to hire and lodge an Omatsi. Isolde hadn't moved away since, though not for a lack of wanting to.
"A place of my own."
Safi must have heard her thread sister say that 1,000 times, 100,000 times. And maybe if Safi had grown up sharing a bed with her mother in a one-room hut as Isolde had, then she'd want a wider, more private, more personal space as well. Yet, Safi had ruined all of Isolde's plans. Every single saved piastra was gone, and all of the Vinyatsa city guards were actively hunting Safi and Isolde. It was literally the worst-case scenario possible, and no emergency satchel or hiding in a lighthouse was going to get them through this mess. Gulping back nausea, Safi staggered to a window across the narrow room and shoved it open. Hot, fish-saturated air wafted in, familiar and soothing. With the sun just rising in the east, the clay rooftops of Vinyatsa City shone like orange flames. It was beautiful, tranquil, and gods below. Safi loved that view. Having grown up in drafty ruins in the middle of the Oran Mountains, having been locked away in the eastern wing whenever Uncle Aaron was in one of his moods, Safi's life in the Hostral Castle had been filled with broken windows and snow seeping in, with frozen winds and dank slithering mold. Everywhere she looked, her eyes would land on carvings or paintings or tapestries of the Hostral Mountain Bat, a grotesque dragon-like creature with the motto, "Love and Dread," scrolling through its talons. But the bridges and canals of Vinyatsa City were always sun-baked and smelling wonderfully of rotten fish. Matthew's shop was always bright and crowded. The wharves were always filled with sailors' deliciously offensive oaths. Here, Safi felt warm. Here, she felt welcome. And sometimes she even felt wanted. Safi cleared her throat. Her hand fell from the latch, and she turned to find Isolde changing into a gown of olive green. Isolde dipped her head to the wardrobe.
"You can wear my extra day gown. That'll show these, though."
Safi rolled up a salt-stiffened sleeve to reveal scrapes and bruises peppering her arms, all of which would be visible in the short capped sleeves that were in style.
"Then it's lucky for you, I still have..."
Isolde swept two cropped black jackets from the wardrobe.
"These?"
Safi's lips crooked up. The jackets were standard attire for all guild apprentices, and these two in particular were trophies from the girl's first hold-up.
"I still maintain," Safi declared, "that we should have taken more than just their jackets when we left them tied up in the storeroom." "Yes, well, next time someone ruins a silk shipment and blames you, Saf, I promise we'll take more than just their jackets."
Isolde tossed the black wool to Safi, who swooped it from the air. As she hastily tore off her clothes, Isolde settled on the edge of her cot, lips pursed to one side.
"I've been thinking," she began evenly, "if that blood witch is really after us, then maybe the Silk Guildmaster could protect you. He's your technical guardian after all, and you do live in his guest room."
"I don't think he'll harbor a fugitive."
Safi's face tightened with a wince.
"It wouldn't be right to drag Guildmaster Alex into this anyway. He's always been so kind to me, and I'd hate to repay him with trouble."
"All right,"
Isolde said, her expression unchanging.
"My next plan involves the Hellbards. They're in Vinyatsa City for the Truce Summit, right? To protect the Kartoran Empire? Maybe you could appeal to them for help since your uncle used to be one, and I doubt even the Dalmoti guards would be stupid enough to cross a Hellbard."
Safi's wince only deepened at that idea.
"Uncle Aaron was a dishonorably discharged Hellbard is. The entire Hellbard Brigade now hates him, and Emperor Henrik hates him even more."
She snorted, a disdainful sound that skittered off the walls and rattled in her belly.
"To make it worse, the Emperor is looking for any excuse to hand over my title to one of his slimy sycophants. I'm sure that holding up a guildmaster is sufficient reason to do so."
For most of Safi's childhood, Her uncle had trained her like a soldier and treated her like one, too. Whenever he'd been sober enough to pay attention, at least. But when Safi had turned 12, Emperor Henrik had decided it was time for Safi to come to the Kartoran capital for her education.
What does she know of leading farmers or organizing a harvest?
Henrik had bellowed at Uncle Aaron, while Safi had waited, small and silent, behind him.
What experience does Safiya have running a household or paying tithes?
It was that last concern, the paying of exorbitant Kartoran taxes, that had Emperor Henrik the most concerned. With all of the nobility wrapped around his ring-clad fingers, he wanted to ensure he had Safi ensnared too. But Henrik's attempt to nab one more loyal domna had fallen apart, for Uncle Aaron hadn't sent Safi to study in Praga with all the other young nobles. Instead, Aaron had packed her off to the south, to the guildmasters and tutors of Vinyatsa City. It was the first and last time Safi had ever felt anything like gratitude for her uncle. In that case, Izult said, tone final and shoulders sagging, I think we'll have to leave the city. We can hole up, somewhere, until all of this blows over. Safi bit her lip. Izult made it sound so easy to hole up somewhere. But the reality was that Izult's clear Nomatsi ancestry made her a target wherever she went. The one time the girls had tried leaving Vinyatsa City to visit a friend nearby, they'd barely made it back home. Of course, the three men in the tavern who'd decided to attack Izult had never made it back home at all. At least not with intact femurs. Safi stomped to the wardrobe and wrenched it open, pretending the handle was the chiseled cheater's nose. If she ever, ever saw that bastard again, she was going to break every bone in his blighted body.
Our best bet, Izult went on, will be the Southern Wharf District. The Dalmati trade ships are berthed there, and we might be able to get passage in exchange for work. Do you need anything from Guildmaster Alex's?
At Safi's head shake, Izult continued.
Good. Then we'll leave notes for Habim and Matthew explaining everything. Then, I guess we'll leave.
Safi stayed silent as she towed out a golden gown. Her throat was too tight for words, her stomach spinning too hard. It was then, as Safi fastened the 10 million wooden buttons and Izult tied a pale gray scarf around her head, that a knocking burst out through the shop.
Vinyatsa City Guard,
came a muffled voice.
Open up. We saw you break in.
Izult sighed, a sound of such long, long suffering. I know, Safi growled, sliding the last button in place. You told me so.
Just so long as you're aware.
Like you'll ever let me forget.
Izult's lips twitched with a smile, but it was a false attempt, and Safi didn't need her truth witchery to see that. As the girls tugged on their scratchy apprentice jackets, the guard started his bellowing again.
Open up. There's only one way in or out of this shop.
Not true, Safi inserted.
We won't hesitate to use force.
And nor will we. At a nod from her thread sister, Safi scooted to Isolt's bed. Then they both dragged the cot toward the door. Wooden feet groaned, and soon enough they had it heaved on its side to form a barricade, one that they knew worked well. For this was hardly the first time Safi and Isolt had been forced to sneak out. Although it had always been Matthew and Habim bellowing on the other side, not armed guards. Moments later, Safi and Izult stood at the window, breathing fast and listening as the front door smashed inward, as the entire shop quaked and glass shattered. Cringing, Safi clambered onto the roof. First, she'd lost all her money, and now she'd ruined Matthew's shop. Maybe it was a good thing her tutors were out of town on business. At least she wouldn't have to face Matthew or Habim anytime soon. Isolde scrabbled out beside Safi, the emergency satchel on her back bulging with supplies. Isolde's weapons fit into calf scabbards beneath her skirt, but Safi could only stow her parrying knife in her boot. Her sword, her beautiful folded steel sword, was staying behind.
"Where to?"
Safi asked, knowing her thread sister had a root spinning behind those glittering eyes.
"We'll head inland, as if we're going to Guildmaster Alex's, and then aim south."
"Rooftops?"
"For as long as we can. You lead the way."
Safi nodded curtly before kicking into a run, west, toward the inner heart of the Nyatza city. And when she reached the edge of Matthew's roof, she leaped for the next slope of shingles. She slammed down. Pigeons burst upward, wings flapping to get out of the way, and then Isolde bounded down beside her. But Safi was already moving, already flying for the next roof, and the next roof after that, on and on with Isolde right behind. Isolde slunk along the cobblestoned street, Safi two steps ahead. The girls had veered inland from the coffee shop, crossing canals and looping back over bridges to avoid city guards. Fortunately, morning traffic had begun. A teeming mass of fruit-laden carts, donkeys, goats, and people of all races and nationalities. Threads with colors as varied as their owners' skins swirled lazily through the heat. Safi skipped in front of a swine cart, leaving Isolde to chase after her. Then it was around a beggar, past a group of purists shouting about the sins of magic, and then directly through a herd of unhappy sheep, before the girls reached a clogged mass of unmoving traffic. Ahead, threads swirled with red annoyance at the holdup. Isolde imagined her own threads were just as red. The girls were so close to the southern wharf district that Isolde could even see the hundreds of white-sailed ships berthed ahead. But she embraced the frustration. Other emotions, ones she didn't want to name and that no decent thread witch would ever allow to the surface, shivered in her chest.
"Stasis,"
she told herself, just as her mother had her taught years ago.
"Stasis in your fingertips and your toes."
Soon, the threads of traffic flickered with cyan understanding. The color moved like a snake across a pond, as if the crowds were learning, one by one, the reason for this traffic jam. Back, the color moved, until at last an old biddy near the girls squawked,
"What? A blockade up ahead? But I'll miss the freshest crabs."
Isolde's gut turned icy, and Safi's threads flashed with gray fear.
"Hell gates,"
she hissed.
"Now what is?" "More brazening, I think."
With a grunt and shifting of her weight, Isolde fished out a thick gray tome from her pack.
"We look like two very studious apprentices if we're carrying books. You can take A Brief History of Dalmoti Autonomy."
"Brief, my behind," Safi muttered, though she did accept the enormous book. Next, Isolde hauled out a blue hide-bound volume titled An Illustrated Guide to the Carowin Monastery.
"Oh, now I see why you have these."
Safi lifted her eyebrows, daring Isolde to argue.
"They aren't for disguise at all. You just didn't want to leave behind your favorite book."
"And?" Isolde sniffed dismissively.
"Does this mean you don't want to carry that?"
No, I'll keep it."
Safi popped her chin high.
"Just promise that you'll let me do all the acting once we reach the guards." "Act away, Saf.
Grinning to herself, Isolde tugged her scarf low. It was soaked through with sweat, but it still shaded her face, her skin. Then she adjusted her gloves until not an inch of wrist was visible. All the focus would be on Sophie, and would stay on Sophie. For as Matthew always said, with your right hand give a person what he expects, and with your left hand cut his purse. Sophie always played the distracting right hand, and she was good at it, while Isolde lurked in the shadows, ready to claim whatever purse needed cutting. As Isolde settled into a boiling weight, she creaked back her book's thick cover. Ever since a monk had helped Isolde when she was a little girl, Isolde had been somewhat, well, obsessed, was the word Sophie always used. But it wasn't just gratitude that had left Isolde fascinated by the Carowinds. It was their pure robes and gleaming opal earrings, their deadly training and sacred vows. Life at the Carowind Monastery seemed so simple, so contained. No matter one's heritage, one could join and have instant acceptance, instant respect. It was a feeling Isolde could scarcely imagine, yet her heart beat hungrily every time she thought of it. The book's pages rustled open to page 37, to where a bronze piastra shone up at her. She had wedged the coin there to mark her last page, and its winged lion seemed almost to laugh at her.
The first piastra toward our new life, Isolde thought.
Then her eyes flickered over the ornate Dalmati script on the page. Descriptions and images of different Carowind monks scrolled across it, the first of which was Mercenary Monk, its illustration all knives and sword and stony expression. It looked just like the Blood Witch.
Blood Witch. Blood Witch.
Ice pooled in Isolde's belly at the memory of his red eyes, his bared teeth.
Ice.
And something hollower.
Heavier. Disappointment,
she finally pinpointed. For it seemed so vastly wrong that a monster such as he should be allowed into the monastery's ranks. Isolde glanced at the caption beneath the illustration, as if this might offer some explanation. Yet all she read was, trained to fight abroad in the name of the Kar Awen. Isolde's breath slid out at that word. Kar Awen. And her chest stretched tight. As a girl, she'd spent hours climbing trees and pretending she was one of the Kar Awen. That she was one of the two witches born from the origin wells who could cleanse even the darkest evils. But just as many of the springs feeding the wells had been dead for centuries, no new Kar Awen had been born in almost 500 years, and Isolde's fantasies had inevitably ended with gangs of village children. They would swarm whatever tree she'd clambered into, shouting up curses and hate that they'd learned from their parents.
A thread witch who can't make threadstones doesn't belong here.
Isolde had always known in those moments, as she hugged a tree branch tight and prayed that her mother would find her soon, that the Kar Awen was nothing more than a pretty story. Gulping, Isolde heaved aside those memories. This day was bad enough. No need to dredge up old miseries, too. Besides, she and Sophie were almost to the guards now, and Habim's oldest lesson was whispering at the back of her mind.
Evaluate your opponents, he always said. Analyze your terrain. Choose your battlefields when you can.
Single file lines, the guards called. Any weapons must be out where we can see them.
Isolde clapped her book shut in a whoof of musty air.
10 guards, she counted, spread out across the road with carts stacked behind them to block the crowd. Crossbows, cutlasses.
If this little interrogation didn't go well,
then there was no way the girls could fight their way through.
All right, Safi muttered. It's our turn. Keep your face hidden.
Isolde did as ordered and sank into position.